Would you be seated, please? Last year, at our annual bazaar, my contribution to the silent auction was a sermon on the topic of the highest bidder's choice. That bidder was David Anderson. And if you know anything of David, you will not be surprised to hear that he has asked me to consider the moral imperatives laid upon the church by climate change, bearing in mind that the most devastating effects of environmental degradation are being borne by those least responsible for causing it, on the one hand, and least equipped to extricate themselves from it, on the other. David noted that the churches, not just our church, but the churches, are well positioned, not least as firsthand witnesses situated almost everywhere on this globe, to speak out. And then he asked what for me may be the most troubling question of all. We are in the process of making this earth uninhabitable, he said. We know it, and we have the God-given intelligence and creativity to stop it. Why don't we? On this Sunday, when we pause to give thanks for the fruits of the earth, could there be a more appropriate occasion to consider our sacred trust as stewards? For let us never forget that this earth does not belong to us. As the psalmist says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. It belongs to its maker. Why, in some sense, you know, even the idea of owning land, which we simply take for granted, is foreign to the theology of creation. A Native American proverb says this: we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. So what has gone wrong? How did we get in this pickle? And why are we having such a hard time getting out of it? Well, alas, the Judeo-Christian tradition, as the dominant religious influence in Western culture until very recently, has had no small part to play in our current attitudes and behaviors and our blinkered indifference. Now, please note, I'm not saying that our culture realizes that it's acting out of a theological position. But I am saying that, know it or not, as a culture, we have imbibed a worldview that is deeply rooted in the traditional teachings and understandings of the church. Shame on us. First and most important has been our reading of the creation narrative in Genesis 1, in which God says to Adam, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the face of the earth." We have seen ourselves as the pinnacle of creation, and we've operated from an anthropocentric view, whereby our stewardship of creation is governed by whatever we humans need or want. Now, it's perhaps too facile to blame it all on industrialization, But somewhere around there, we got the idea that the earth and its resources could be pressed into the service of humankind without our ever asking what we could do for the earth and its resources. It was all about us. It was there for us. So we could cut down the rainforests and flood the river valleys and extract and use all fossil fuels with impunity just because we thought we needed to. We forgot the cautionary words of the prophets who remind us that dominion, in God's view, is not the same as domination. Rather, it is more like servanthood or shepherding. The image of God as a king is a shepherd king. And it is only in recent years that we have come to understand ourselves not as the pinnacle of creation, but as part of a complex and magnificent ecosystem. The welfare of the lowly bee or the vilified bat, for example, both under siege at this time because of human behaviors, their well-being is essential to our well-being. Our dominion must be reconstrued as responsibility. Secondly, some theologians point to the church's emphasis on personal salvation as a contributing factor to our neglect or disinterest in environmental concerns. And in my experience, it is generally true that churchgoers are far more focused on their personal spirituality and their personal issues than they are on the wider world and how our faith calls us to engage with issues that we don't see as strictly religious. We seem to forget that the reason God gave us his Christ is that he loved the world. All of it, not just humans. That's on the church's side. But more than this, our society itself has imbibed a number of assumptions and what I would call sicknesses of the soul that militate against good environmental practice and that paralyze our willingness to make life-giving decisions. And here, again, not to be facile, it's the age of technology and information that has fueled our choices. We demand choice. My definition of hell would be to be locked in the hosiery department of the bay or the cereal aisle at Thrifty's. We demand novelty. We've lost our appreciation for faded elegance and weather-beaten beauty. We demand speed and, most of all, convenience. I'm probably going to get in trouble, but I'll say this anyway. Why scrub a roasting pan when you can buy a disposable foil one? Why walk when you can drive? We demand what we consider affordability, no matter what the cost to the environment or to the people in squalid and unsafe conditions producing our clothing and other commodities. And of course, we demand something new. I mean, yeah, my car still works, but wouldn't it be great to have one of those gizmos that would help me back up? And how do we even know that all these fast and shiny desirables are available to us? We know because we are bombarded on every side by advertisements telling us that we need these things. They will make us happy or beautiful or wealthy or popular. That we fall for this sort of messaging is a sign of a deep spiritual crisis. Christians, above all, need to take measure of our souls. But perhaps most important is the assumption that all progress, all growth is a good and desirable thing, that more is always better. But is this in fact true? Is there never a point at which we have enough, at which we don't need another barrel of light crude, another million in profits, another catch of farmed salmon? Sadly, we are indentured to what we call the economy. But note this, what we mean by the economy is the market. All those little green and red arrows pointing up or down, which are reported to us with a religiosity equaled only by the sportscast and the weather report. We have made the economy, the markets, the god to whose movements we bow. We've made it the altar at which we sacrifice our common sense and our planet. Growth without limits seems to undergird our personal and societal aspirations. We must keep going. We must keep competitive. We can't stop now. Well, when you can't stop, even when you can see that this story isn't going to end well, that, my friends, is the very definition of possession. We are possessed, and that is a profoundly spiritual problem, and it is right in the church's wheelhouse. What a far cry from the original meaning of the Greek word oikonomia, which meant the ordering of one's household. Home economics. It was about the organization of human livelihood, not the market. And just so the church speaks of the economy of salvation, that is, the ordering of God's benevolence so that all are included and equal. Well, I leave my concluding comments to the Reverend Dr. John Weaver, not our Dr. Weaver, but a good Dr. Weaver nonetheless, a man who has a particular interest in assisting seminarians to embrace environmental theology in their course of study. And he says this: Christians must learn to think and act ecologically, repent of extravagance, pollution, and wanton destruction, and recognize that human beings find it easier to subdue the earth than they do to subdue themselves. Christians face the task of articulating the gospel with relevance, to speak prophetically and relevantly to the environmental and social issues of our day, and to rediscover a holistic doctrine of creation. Weaver quotes this proverb from the American Cree: only when the last tree has been cut, the last river poisoned, and the last fish caught, only then you will realize that one cannot eat money. I desperately hope that this is not true. On this festival of the harvest, where once again the earth has shown her desire to be fruitful, and where we, please God, desire to make our gratitude real, are we reminded of another proverb: no one can go back and make a brand new start. Anyone can start from now and make a brand new beginning.